Welcome back to Hype Podcast. This is Hypeable.com's flagship show where we bring you all the latest news and entertainment and pop culture and fun analysis every week. My name is Pamela and I'm one of the main hosts on this show. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. This is one of our special episodes and it's centered around everybody's new favorite Netflix obsession, Stranger Things. By popular demand, we're doing this special because you guys won't even, like, believe how many people we had reach out asking, like, are you guys going to talk about Stranger Things? Are you going to do a Stranger Things special? So we're really, really excited to talk about this show. I feel like everybody's, like, super into it. I also have another one of our regular co-hosts with me on to record this special. Kristen is here as well. How are you doing, Kristen?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very good. I'm so happy that we're on this special episode together. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking about it on the regular show, you know, in our TV show of the week segment. So it's going to be fun to, like, really dive in. And then, of course, when we do our specials, we do like to incorporate some of our other lovely Hypeable staffers into the mix. We have two Stranger Things super fans with us today. We have Karen and Michal, who are going to be talking about this awesome show with us. Do you guys just want to introduce yourselves so that everybody can kind of get a feel for your voice and then also kind of explain to everybody listening what you do on the show?
Yeah, so my name is Karen, and I guess my main role on Hypeable is a little twofold. First one is I'm one of the editors, and the other one is I do write news, mostly Teen Wolf, sadly, which is ending. But that's my big one, and yeah, I'm really excited to talk about Stranger Things, and I'm glad to be on here. Fun fact, I have been on Hype before, but it was our lost episode. Do you remember that, Pam?
I do. It was such a good episode. It was you, me, and Kristen. It was amazing.
Yeah, and my recorder crashed, so you will never get that gem of an episode. But I'm back, and hopefully this time it all works out.
And I'm Michal. I'm the basically Marvel television writer on Hypeable. I also cover Game of Thrones and Star Wars Rebels, and I work for the book section as well. And my fun fact is that it's 11 o'clock, which I thought was appropriate.
It's always a good time to talk about Stranger Things. And you were also on our Comic-Con special.
I was,
because, yeah, Michal, Kyle, Selena, and I, we all shared this awesome Airbnb together, and it was a good time.
I know. I had a better time than I expected at that convention. But you can listen to that episode to find out all of the excitement going on there.
That's right. That's right. Well, we're going to get excited about a whole new topic, guys. Let's just jump right into this. I want to start kind of like with a soft open, as we usually do on our regular show. And I really want to know, like, how everybody kind of got into this series. Did you hear about it through word of mouth, or, like, were you just, like, browsing Netflix? Like, what about it kind of just made you hit play? And let's start with Michal, since you were just talking.
Well, I think I saw it in like the Netflix press website, because I had screeners for Luke Cage and I had to, like, go through the main site, and they were like the you know, the homepage, and they were like Stranger Things, and I was like, don't know what that is, don't care. And then I read an article about Winona Ryder and I was like, okay, still interesting, but don't care. And then it exploded. I feel like I still have pieces of it in, like, on myself from the explosion on my Twitter feed of everyone talking about the show. And I put it off for a while. And then I was hanging out with my sister. We were trying to watch something else and it didn't work. And earlier that day, a friend of mine had been like, you have to watch this show. I was like, why don't we watch the first episode of this show? Maybe it won't be so bad, whatever, it's only 8 episodes. And then we were both hooked, like, instantly. So for me, this was definitely one of those, like, oh, okay, I have to eat some crow right now, because it's as good as everyone's saying it is.
I saw the advertisements on Netflix, the Netflix homepage, and I was like, oh, this looks kind of cool. It had that great cover photo with 11 right in the middle, and it looked very nostalgic and artsy. And I was like, this is kind of piquing my interest. I don't really know anything about it, but maybe I'll check it out when it comes out. And I forget, I was away or something when it came out, and by the time I got back, It came out right before San Diego Comic-Con, didn't it? And I think by the time I got back, everyone was talking about it. And I was like, clearly, I need to check out this show. So I was already interested in watching it. But when I saw that everyone was going crazy, I was like, okay, this can be my next binge watch. It's not going to take that long. And, you know, it's so easy to just go from episode to episode on Netflix. And that's what I did. And like Michal, I just instantly fell in love with it and binged the whole thing.
And Kristen, you and Karen, you guys are roomies. Did you guys watch it together? Or did you watch it separately?
Well, the first time Karen watched it, I was not watching it with her. She binged it all on her own, like during the day when I wasn't home. And after, like, I think she was on like episode 6, and she was like, "Kristen, there's only 8 episodes, and oh my god!" And like, she'd tell me, like, "Oh my god, this show is so great!" And I was like, "Yeah, okay." And everybody was freaking out about it at this point, but it looked like it was gonna be really scary, and I don't do scary very well. Like, I don't mind thriller-ish kind of stories and, like, mysteries and all that, but, like, straight-up scary series and movies, I usually skip. AHS is not for me. So I was gonna, like, skip by it, but Karen was like, no, you have to watch this, we are going to watch it. Let's do this. So then she and I both watched it together, for her the second time, for me the first, and it was really great and I loved it. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I watched it with my brother, which was good because there were definitely moments where I needed to have somebody next to me to be like, "Oh my god," or, you know, laugh at me when I jumped, because there were some moments that did make me kind of jump you know, out of my seat, so to speak. But I started kind of like, somebody I ran into at Comic-Con that I used to work with mentioned it to me, and I'm such a sucker for like 80s nostalgia, so I kind of went into it not expecting too much, and it completely blew my mind. I think that is most people's experiences with Stranger Things. Like, you hear about the hype and you think, oh, this can't possibly be as good as everybody's saying, but then it ends up being like even better than you had imagined. And it's like, it's such a wonderful show, and I'm so glad that like most people universally tend to have the same opinion on it. But speaking of nostalgia, I do want to talk about the nostalgia factor, because so much of everybody's like love for this show does center around the fact that it's like a wonderful tribute to 80s pop culture in general, because of course the show is set in the 80s, but just kind of like the little tip of the hats that the Duffer brothers do include in on the show are like so wonderful if you are a pop culture junkie. Was there anything specifically that like really got you guys and like made you feel all warm and fuzzy because like your favorite like little piece of pop culture, you know, whatever, was kind of referenced in some way on this series?
I'm literally the opposite. Like, the 80s was kind of, I thought that was the only reason people liked the show. And I was like, well, I don't really care. Like, I haven't seen Goonies. I'm the only person in the world who doesn't like E.T. So, like, I didn't find that as an attraction. What I did, I haven't even played Dungeons & Dragons, but I was really, really taken by that scene of like the opening scene of the boys at the beginning, and just like how into it they are, because like that's all of geekdom, no matter what you happen to be geeking out about. But I did just kind of love the simplicity of it. Like, where are you? I don't know. You don't have a cell phone, you know, like, and the phone is attached to the wall and it stays over there, you know, and you have to get your music from this enormous thing, you know, and It was weirdly kind of comforting to me, and I found that kind of like snuggly and nice to think about, even though I'd probably go crazy.
I'm much the same way, actually. I don't mind the 80s or anything, and I've watched Goonies and I like E.T., but that wasn't really a factor for me in terms of like the pop culture references, although the Poltergeist reference, no thank you, because that movie scared the crap out of me. But other than that, I just really liked the clothes and the hair, and like Michal was saying, just like the 80s vibe of the time. I like going back in time and seeing what it was like when, you know, people didn't have cell phones and all that kind of thing, and how they operated and the sort of social norms. And so I found the atmosphere much more interesting than, you know, the pop culture references.
for me, it wasn't, like, one specific reference, but I liked the overall, like, E.T. Spielbergian, like, feel to all the scenes with the kids. Like, the rest of it had other influences, you can tell, but the stuff with the kids felt straight out of E.T. or, like, J.J. Abrams' Super 8, which is kind of an homage to Spielberg. Like, it had that, like, anxiety, that excitement, and I really love that, so.
I'm actually right there with you. I always, like, while I was watching this, I just kind of felt like it was the perfect blend of Stand By Me meets Spielberg's other kind of, like, alien-esque classic, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, especially with all of the lights. Like, the idea of, like, Will using the lights to communicate with his mother and stuff like that was very Close Encounters to me, because that plays a big role in human-alien communication in that film. So that is wonderful. But I do want to talk about, of course, like, the series centers around this core gang of Mike, Dustin, Lucas, and then Eleven, who pops in later. And they're all just, you know, trying to save their friend because the adults aren't getting it done. And, like, what about, like, this group of kids, like, really kind of stole the show for you guys? Because, I mean, so much of it centers around them. And I feel like if it wasn't this particular, like, group of characters, like, it wouldn't have been so interesting to watch. Like, everybody kind of brought something different. So what was it about them that really, like, drew you in?
I mean, it's hard to watch that opening scene and not put yourself in there somehow. Like, even if you don't play Dungeons and Dragons, like, you still have your friends over and you're watching a movie and you're mocking the person who's hiding their face in the corner. Or, you know, like, it's so easy to, like, feel comfortable with them right off the bat because you've got this scene with them just joking around, playing this game, and, you know, Mike runs upstairs and his mom kind of scolds him because they've been playing for 10 hours. Like, immediately you feel like you're a part of the group, and I think that's what makes them so much fun and just so relatable for me.
Yeah, they do an amazing job of kind of showing, you know, of just showing you how much these kids mean to each other. You know, the I don't know, the little conversation of, like, Dustin expecting Nancy to, like, want the extra piece of pizza, and then their conversation about her and, like, debating whether or not she's gone crazy or not. There's a real, I don't know, they just capture that camaraderie. Like, you feel like you are friends with them, even though, like, I'm way, way, way older than they are, you know, but you kind of put yourself in that headspace. And also just Dustin is everything, so.
Yeah, Dustin is definitely everything. I think part of it is just the actors themselves. They're very real. It's very raw acting, and they're a little bit awkward. Some of the things they do, you're, like, kind of embarrassed by, but they're just, you know, they're kids, they're boys, and I think that realness comes through and makes it much easier to connect with them. But even other than that, it's their loyalty to each other that always gets me. They really care about each other, and yes, they fight, but at the end of the day, they're going to come back together, and they're all working so hard to find their friend who's gone missing, and they're willing to be open-minded. I mean, Lucas a little bit less so than the others, but in the end, he comes around. They're willing to be open-minded and to do whatever they can to save their friend, and it's that loyalty that just, I love it so much. You don't always see that in adult characters who might hold grudges a bit longer or something like that. These kids are just really genuine, and I really appreciated seeing that.
And we see that too, even just in the way that they all kind of welcome Eleven in, like you said, like, some, like, quicker than others, but it's nice to see, like, that extend to her, because all of a sudden she's a part of the group, and, like, that's really the only thing that matters. So, but let's talk a little bit about Eleven. She's obviously another scene stealer. She's kind of become this, like, instant cult classic. So what do we think makes her so beloved? Like, why was she so instantly, why do people so instantly gravitate towards her? What is it about her that we love?
She's a badass.
I was going to say, I think it has something to do with the fact that she doesn't say a whole lot. Like, she doesn't speak all the time, but she, you feel like you know her, like, just from what she gives you, from her eyes and her expressions. Like, she's, the actress is so fantastic, and the character just jumps off the screen. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Millie Bobby Brown was the find of the century, maybe. And I think just Eleven as a character, I agree. It's in how sparsely she's written, because the things that she says, it's almost like the look on her, you can't not look at her. You can't look down when she's on the screen because you're going to miss something, you know, because she's not going to tell you with her words. And when she does tell you with her words, it's going to be like so cryptic and vitally important that, like, you won't even understand, you know? So I think she's mysterious for us, but she immediately elicits so much sympathy, you know, because obviously we are kind of finding out with, we have some, you know, the benefit of some insight into her flashbacks, but, like, for the most part, we're still kind of, like, child in a hospital gown, starving by herself with shaved head and a tattoo. You know, it's a very kind of viscerally needy approach to a character, but then obviously she's a character who proves to have so much agency that I think it's really appealing.
And it's that dynamic of her being so utterly vulnerable and yet so incredibly powerful, and the way that they can balance that, just like you said, you just can't look away from her when she's on screen.
That's such a good point, because in a way she is like so like much older beyond her years because she has gone through all of this stuff. And yet what's really missing is that she, you know, she's never really like been a kid, and not that she like reverts back to a child, but I think that being with these three boys like really kind of makes her evolve in a sense, because she suddenly has this warm like contact from people that like care about her, and that's like, it's a really nice I guess development in terms of like just like to watch her kind of go from being so cold but also like then gravitating towards these boys as much as like they decide to take her under their wing. It's almost like she's decided that she's going to be their protector, and that's like really great. I also wanted to ask, like, did anybody else think that she was going to be like the actual like kidnapper monster? Because, you know, she kind of shows up right after Will disappears, and she's like, you know, it's kind of like scary, and she doesn't say much, and you can tell that she has like this connection to this other place, but we don't really know very much about her. So did anybody think that she was going to end up being the bad guy?
Nah. I was too into the budding romance between her and Mike. I didn't really see her as nefarious.
I mean, in those opening scenes with Benny, I was a little skeptical, because it was like, okay, who is this kid? Like, while she's sitting there on the counter eating all of his ice cream, she just seemed really innocent and sweet. But, you know, we hadn't met her, really. We didn't really know anything about her. So I was definitely a little on edge. But once she met Mike and them, I was pretty determined to believe she wasn't going to end up being the bad guy.
Did anyone think she was cool. Hopper's daughter? I thought that for like a second.
Oh,
and I was like,
that's
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think my brain went there, because she was just so clearly like almost kind of like out of this worldly.
Yeah.
To me, that I thought of anything like she was going to end up being like, you know, like not just having like the power of telekinesis, but like maybe even being like from some other world. I never would have thought that she was just like this little girl with extraordinary abilities. I just thought she must have come from somewhere else.
She kind of does, in a way.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that... I think she's definitely of the Upside Down as much, if not more, than she is of our world. She's kind of been forced into that. I mean, I don't know if we want to get into theories, but, like, I have theories about that.
Actually, like, if they revolve around her, I would love to hear your theories about, like, you know, are you talking about, like, origin theories or, like, what we're going
to
see?
Not so much origin, but I think that she must have gone back to the Upside Down. I feel like that's her kind of quest. She feels responsible for it, and I think that I think we haven't seen the last of the Upside Down, and that that is where she's got to be hiding. She's got to be kind of like kicking monster ass and doing stuff like that, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's what I think.
I mean, like, she, you know what? Let's talk about the Upside Down, because she really is, like, so connected to it. So it makes sense to bring it up now. I almost kind of felt like I kind of agree that she must be, like, there. It almost kind of felt like there needed to be a balance in the Upside Down, or is that just me? Like, maybe she needed to go back because there was no Demigorg, like, not Demigorgon, not that she, like, needs to be the monster, but, like, I don't know. It almost kind of felt like there needed to be some kind of balance restored because it was now dead. You know? Does that make sense?
It's been so long since I watched this probably about a month ago now. So I'm trying to remember everything. And I can't remember. Do we get the scene with Mike in the bathroom before or after Hopper, like, puts stuff in the tree stump?
I think Will. We get it before. Yeah, with Will.
Like, do we see Will cough up whatchamacallit into the sink before or after Hopper? Like, we obviously see that Hopper is communicating with Elle, like, giving her waffles. The waffles. Because, like, I think I initially assumed that she, being connected to it, sort of knew that there was some sort of unfinished business with the Upside Down, because, okay, with the ending of it, I still think that there are going to be other Demigorgons. We'll find out if that's going to happen, but, like, just with how it ended, I feel like there is a possibility of a new one rising up, and I feel like she and her connection kind of knew that something was unsettled there, and so she went back to, like, keep an eye on things and try and stop any of this from happening again.
Yeah, I don't know if it was, like, intentional. Like, I'm gonna destroy the Demigorgon and go back to the Upside Down, but I think that, or go to the Upside Down, but I think that it was definitely a possibility in her mind. I mean, like, the look on her face when she's, you know, doing that, she knows that, like, something big is going to go down, some kind of permanent change. So I do think that, I mean, Elle's responsibility for, and her feeling of responsibility for the Upside Down and for what's happened to Will and for, you know, maintaining the safety of the other boys is such a strong theme that I definitely think that she, yeah, I don't know that, like, there are other Demigorgons, because I feel like they're going to do, like, a, like, villain of the season or monster of the season. But I think that, I mean, it looks like kind of almost anything could come out of there. So she is doing whatever she needs to do, thinks has to be done in there, and probably coming out through the tree. Or Hopper's crazy and doesn't, like, and is just leaving food places. Like, I feel like that's also possible.
I mean, that's a good point, because we don't necessarily know if he's doing it out of habit in the hopes that maybe she's coming back, or if she's actually taking them from that box. So,
well, because we don't know never what really happens see in the to box. Hopper, right? Like, in that room, like, something weird, or, like, when he gets picked up by them.
There's something weird
that happens, and we don't know what it is.
I really want to know what information he knows now. Like, does he know where Eleven is and what's going on with her? Or is he taking a stab in the dark? And how wrapped up is he going to be in everything come season two? Because I really enjoyed his character, and I liked that he was always kind of sticking it to the man. And now I'm worried that because he got picked up in that car and he might be wrapped up in whatever is going on behind the scenes, that maybe he's being manipulated or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, it's so funny because, like, the adults in this series, like Hopper, like, you automatically assume that because they're adults, like, and their minds are not open, that they are more susceptible to something like that, like being swayed one way or another. Whereas, like, the kids, they, like, very clearly see, like, this is right and this is wrong, and, like, this obviously makes sense. So I have a lot of questions about Hopper as well, and, like, specifically with his relation to Eleven now, because I mean, like, I always assumed that he was in communication with her, but like you guys said, it's like, we don't really know for sure. Like, he could just be trying to lure her out of wherever she is.
Yeah, it's definitely possible, because, I mean, that scene definitely gives you like, oh, Eleven's alive, she gets Eggos for Christmas, or whatever BS that is, you know? But I feel like come next season, that scene could have a much darker, reflexively be much darker than it actually is. I don't think Hopper is going to be like evil because, or super manipulated, because he was so willing. And one of the reasons I like stopped hating him, because my initial reaction was to hate him in like the first episode. And I ended up loving him, was because he was so willing to not go like, well, that's the rational explanation, so I guess we better move on. You know, like he was willing to go down the conspiracy path, to look at the weird things that were happening, to unscrew every light bulb in, you know, Joyce's house. Like he has that in him. So if he is cooperating with the whatever laboratory people, I don't know if he'll be successful, but I think he's got like plans.
So maybe he's like a double agent.
Yeah. Or they're just like, we're controlling everything you do now and you have no say in it. And he's just like, okay, sure. That's fine. And by the way, I'm just going to like, you know, steal your files and whatever. By the way, was anyone else struck at how easy it is to break into places in the 1980s? It was like they practically didn't have security cameras. I mean, they do, but then they have to like physically, like, you have all these lumbering
change the
people.
Tapes.
Exactly. Like, it was just like, he was just like, I'm just going to punch this guy and go inside. And like, that's it. It's like, wow, things got a lot more secure and difficult since then.
I mean, I feel like Hopper did have an edge because he was like an officer himself. So he can get like a little further than like the average Joe can, but yeah.
I mean, he's also Han Solo. I totally get that. So.
Exactly.
Like, literally Han Solo. I was just, like, watching it. I was like, oh my goodness. You definitely just watched Star Wars before you started filming this and are just channeling Harrison Ford. And there's nothing wrong with that. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Since we're on the subject of adults, let's talk about Joyce a bit, because she is such, like, a badass mom. And I kind of love that she doesn't care that everybody thinks she's crazy. Like, she knows what she saw, and she is like, you know, she's going to go with it. She strings up all the lights in her house, and, you know, it's great. What did you guys think about her?
I loved her, and I thought that portrayal was so realistic that it made me nervous. It made me sit on the edge of my seat, because you could feel how worried she was about her son. Like you were saying, you know, she didn't care if people thought she was crazy. Her number one goal was finding her son, and she was going to do whatever it took to get him back, and it didn't matter what other people said. And I think, you know, she, when you first meet her and you see her, you know, yelling at Jonathan, you kind of, you don't particularly like her, because you're like, you know, dude, give the kid a break. Like, he's doing the best he can. You kind of come down on his side. But after that initial introduction, you just realize, yeah, maybe she doesn't say all the right things all the time, but she loves her sons more than anything else. And that really shines through her character.
Yeah, I mean, as much as people talk about Millie Brown, Winona Ryder, her portrayal of Joyce is just as, like, noteworthy for me. She was fantastic, and it was so gut-wrenching to watch her figure out how to talk to Will and then literally sit in her house and wait because he could, you know, get in contact at any time, and she doesn't want to miss him. So, like, you're watching this mother who is the only person who believes that her son is not gone. He is, you know, he may be quote-unquote dead, but he is not gone, and she knows that. So, no matter what the world is telling her, she is, you know, the only person. And it just, watching someone go through that is so intense. And for me, she just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
I've heard people say that, and I don't disagree. She is a little one note, but, and, you know, from a feminist perspective, she is kind of just like mother, you know, but like, I kind of don't care because she does it so well and the circumstances are so intense and bizarre. And like, I don't know, like when Joyce like stands up to the, you know, her boss at the store and when like she stands up to Lonnie and whatever, I'm just like that is so incredibly strong to me. And yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of, I mean, it's old fashioned, right? Like this idea of like a mother's love just being so powerful that she will communicate with her son through light bulbs and, you know, go into a crazy hellish underworld, you know, but I think they carry it out really well. And I agree that Winona Ryder is just, I mean, it like I expected her to be good. So I guess I that's why she like never like stood out to me as like a, better than the rest because I was expecting that. But yeah, no, she, oh yeah, she's good.
So let's talk about, of course we have like the adults, we have the kids. We also have the teenagers. That's like the other core group in this. I want to talk a little bit about the Nancy, Steve, Jonathan dynamic. Specifically, I guess like Steve starts out obviously like as a jerk, like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But he kind of turns over a new leaf. So like, I mean, are we like happy with his, where his character ends up? Like, do we consider him redeemed?
I was surprised by how much I actually liked him by the end. I really wasn't expecting that, and I think that's another great thing that the show has done, and that, yeah, I would say he kind of is redeemed by the end, at least in my eyes, just because he, you know, nobody on this show is perfect, except for the kids, obviously, but all of the other characters have these dimensions to them where you don't always like them all the time, or they make bad choices or they say things that you don't agree with, and that's fine because that just makes them more realistic. That's just human nature. And Steve was, first of all, his hair was obnoxious. I could not get over his hair because it just kept growing throughout the series and getting higher and higher. But aside from that, by the end, it was nice to see him come back. It was nice to see him stand up for himself and stand up with the others. I was fully expecting him to run away and just kind of disappear into the night. And he didn't. He fought back and he helped them. And that end scene where, you know, he was in on giving Jonathan the camera means that he's putting, you know, one foot forward and he's trying to walk down a different path. And I really appreciated that. Even though I like Jonathan like 10 times more, I was surprised that in the end, Steve was like, okay, I guess I kind of like you too.
So in episode, I don't know, 7, the one where they paint, you know, Nancy's a whore and whatever on the thing, and Jonathan and him have that fight, I hated him more than the Demogorgon. I mean, I was like, you are literally the worst creature in this series. And then it was very interesting to me that they kind of like walked away from that and did give him more depth than he had had before, at any point, I think, in the series. I mean, he's such a cliche, like, you know, when he like falls asleep after they have sex and like, it's just like, yeah, whatever, Nancy, like, you know, and she's like, okay, bye. But I don't like him, and I'm really frustrated that Nancy is with him because Barb died so that she could get laid, damn it. But I appreciate it on a human level that, like, Nancy would choose to go back to him and, you know, not to maybe explore things with Jonathan or just to be like, you know what, like, Steven, you're basically my father. In a couple of years. So it wasn't so much Steve that I liked, but I liked the plot, the character choices that were made around him.
So So we're going to get to Barb in a minute, but before we do, I do want to talk about this like Nancy Steve Jonathan love triangle-esque maybe. So are we like generally pleased that she ended up with Steve, or would we rather have had her end up with Jonathan? Because for a minute there, towards the end specifically, I really thought she was just going to ditch Steve and just be like all about Jonathan. Like they share this like very intense journey together. As you can't like fight a demigorgon and like not have some kind of bond after, right?
Yeah, I like that this little triangle didn't end up with her choosing the other guy. Like, typically in a love triangle, like, the girl is with one guy, with guy A. She, you know, starts to get close to guy B, ends up with guy B, and then later on, guy A gets back in the picture somehow. Like, that's typically how love triangles go. It kind of went that way, but she ended up with Steve at the end of season one. Like, who knows where we'll go from here, now that we know we have a season two. But, like, she ends up back with Steve. For me, that's a little bit of a departure from the typical love triangle. And I like that she saw that Steve grew in those last, you know, in the last two episodes. Like, she saw his character grow. And so she liked him. She really did, you know. And I don't think that on her part, it was totally wholehearted. So it makes sense to me that she would give him another chance, seeing that he's trying to be a better person.
See, if they end up together, like, in the end of the series, I'll be very, very annoyed. But I'm kind of, and I'm in that place where, like, I ship her and Jonathan, but I'm also kind of glad that they didn't go there because it is so obvious and, like, you know, they can be friends. That's cool. You know, they can appreciate each other. But, yeah, no, I don't think Steve is good enough for Nancy, like, at all. She's just way too smart and, like, Steve is brave. I'll definitely give him that. But, like, it takes him a good long while to get to that bravery. And, like, he has, everyone else has so many challenges of bravery that, like, and his, like, first big moment is, like, I have to tell my friend not to call the girl I like a whore, basically, you know. So I'm not that impressed with him.
Well, you know who else wasn't good enough for Nancy? Friggin' Barb, you guys. It's just like...
You mean Nancy wasn't good enough for Barb?
Yeah. That's what I meant. Barb was... that's exactly what I meant. Sorry, it's getting late here. Yeah, what do we think about this friendship dynamic? Because I think out of everybody on this series, personally, Nancy annoyed me the most. Specifically because she was such a crap friend. Am I the only one?
Oh, no. She was a terrible friend. Like... Yeah, you just don't do that to your best friend. Like, come on, show some loyalty. I definitely was most annoyed with Nancy with how she treated Barb. I mean, elsewhere in the series, she had some really awesome moments, but her treatment of Barb, you know, like, I liked that she was the only one who noticed her and, like, kept searching for her and never let, you know, her need to find her friend die. Like, she didn't just let it go, but... In, you know, the scenes with her and Steve and at his house and all of that, like, she was not a very good friend.
Oh, no. She was the worst. I mean, yeah. And what's even more frustrating is that it was Barb's car. So, like, Barb could have...
Oh, my gosh, that's the worst.
I mean, she just didn't want to leave Nancy there, you know? And I mean, yeah. That definitely, like, the scene where they're having sex and Nancy and Barb is being murdered by the Demogorgon is, like, is the worst scene in the series for me emotionally. But I literally held out until we saw her dead in episode 7 or whatever. Because I was like, no, everyone, I've heard so much about Barb. I'm sure she's fine. Oh, man.
I completely agree that Nancy was a terrible friend, but I really don't care about Barb at all.
Well, I mean, let's talk about Barb because I feel like Dustin, Barb is like, you know, she's gotten so much hype online specifically. So, I mean, is it just because, like, she basically, like, because Nancy treats her so badly that everybody, like, wants... hashtag justice for Barb to actually come to fruition, or is it something else?
Well, I think that's definitely part of it, but I would say it's also just that she's unconventional, and I think people were really looking forward to her character sticking around because she was unconventional. And I like the idea of Barb, but because we barely saw her in the series, I never got attached. And when I, you know, went online and saw everybody was going crazy over her, I was like, but Dustin, all I care about is Dustin.
See, I liked Barb. I really wanted Barb to be a main fixture of the series. Like, when we first met her and just seeing her with Nancy, like, she was awesome. And yes, I was very sad when she died and when we finally saw her body and I knew there was no hope. But I did not expect people to be quite so enamored with her. Like, I expected her to be a fan, you know, fan favorite. People really liked her. But I didn't expect the Justice for Barb thing at all. I just didn't think she was that, like, essential to the show. Meanwhile, I was attached to Benny in the first 5 seconds, and this is a theme with me. I usually end up liking a character who dies in the first or second episode. I really liked Benny, and yeah, he was donezo, and that made me sad too, so who knows? I just picked the wrong side character.
The thing, I mean, I was also very bummed about Benny, like, for sure, and I got really bad vibes the second that woman stepped in. I was like, I don't think she's from CPS, but I was more, I guess, like, that was more illustrative, you know, whereas we'd already seen Will be taken, but not that Barb's death doesn't serve a narrative purpose, because it does. You know, we see more of the Upside Down, and we get the clue about the blood and whatever, but with Benny, it's like, oh, these people are bad news, and anytime they show up, it's really bad, and they're bad, and it's after 11, and they're after 11, and so it's, like, by extension, super bad that, like, 11 is with the kids, because she's, like, bait, and blah, 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 but I think Barb is just unambiguously different. You know, she is unapologetically frumpy. You know, she is not just in an 80s way. I mean, those pants are just a crime, you know, but she has so much self-confidence and isn't, like, she also opens up a side of Nancy that we don't otherwise see for a little while, which is, I mean, I guess we see Nancy study, like, we get that she is actually smart, but the fact that Nancy would have a friend like Barb and, like, be a real friend to her, I don't know. Like, there was something very different. Yeah, different, I guess, is what I would say about Barb. And I'm really, really bummed. Because, you know, you don't see people that are like her, I guess. I mean, I know there have been all these memes of, like, oh, she's basically Velma from Scooby-Doo, and she's, like, this character and that character, but for me, it was very refreshing to see someone who, like, was just a teenager and composed and, like, smart and, you know. Also, it was frustrating in the end because nobody seemed to give a crap, you know. Like, Nancy's not like, oh, I am spending my first Christmas without Barb or anything like that. It's just, yeah. So that was unfulfilling to me.
You guys want to know a funny story? Like, before I started watching Stranger Things, I literally thought Barb was, like, the main character, because every story that came out about Stranger Things used that same damn photo of Barb. You guys know the one I'm talking about, right? Like, I didn't even see the main kids until the show started. I really just thought it was, like, this is a show about Barb.
Well, I think that's
because
that's
photo was everywhere.
That's not unimportant. I mean, like, I think it was very difficult for me from a pop culture perspective to get a handle on what the show was about, you know, because I didn't, it's like, oh, Will disappears, so it's about Will, but it's not. But it's Winona Ryder, but also there's the kids, but, like, 11, and, you know, and then Hopper turns out to obviously be hugely important. So to me, it's very difficult to kind of nail down. I was trying to, like, pitch it to my mother, and I fell back on the, like, 80s thing, you know? Like, you used to read all those Stephen King novels, Ma. It's like that, you know, it's very difficult for me to kind of write a log line in my head of the show that would attract me to it, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And then I guess the last thing we should talk about with Barb is that, you know, now that we do know that Stranger Things is getting a season two, the Duffer Brothers have promised justice for Barb will be served. So what would we consider, like, you know, proper justice in this case?
I mean, I love Nancy, but I want her to be really sad, like, for a long time.
Or maybe Nancy, like, does something to keep Barb's memory alive. Like, I don't, you know, we didn't really get to know Barb, so we don't know her most favorite thing in the world. But, you know, maybe she finds a way to keep Barb's memory from being just, you know, forgotten, since they don't have a body, they don't know, you know, nobody really knows what happened to Barb besides those that went to the Upside Down and know about it. So maybe she finds a way to kind of keep Barb in people's conscience.
All right. I could deal with that. I'm down with that. So let's see, what else do we want to talk about? Well, I guess, like, we kind of touched on this before, but we didn't really get too into it. One of the last scenes we see does include Will coughing up this kind of slug creature in the background. And then he kind of sees the world as the Upside Down world, for a moment before things kind of go back to normal and he just goes back to, you know, Christmas dinner or whatever. So let's talk about this scene a little bit, because I feel like this, like, has the potential for a lot of theorizing to come from it. Specifically, like, do we think that Will is, like, the new Demogorgon, or, like, what's up with all this, like, slug business?
See, my impression, okay, was he coughs up this bit of the Demogorgon, and then he gets a flash of the Upside Down, and then it flashes back to the real world, and he's still standing in his bathroom. I just believed that little flash was the Demogorgon going back to the Upside Down. So I assumed that Will is now, like, free of it. Like, it was just one last little piece of it left. And that piece could potentially grow to become the Demogorgon again, or a new one, or whatever. And so it was returning to the Upside Down to grow safely back home. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what I assumed happened, but apparently is not the only option.
So I think he is breeding something inside him. I think he, because that thing that was in his mouth when he was in there is some kind of different creature. I don't think it's exactly the same thing. You know, as the Demogorgon, I think that would be like, gosh, having Voldemort come back in every book or something, but you know what I mean? So I think he's breeding something. I think that Joyce and Jonathan think that they have gotten, you know, their precious, adorable child back. And I think his friends think that they've rescued Will. And I think that basically right now, Hopper and Will are the only people who know that this isn't over. And I think that will be very interesting going forward, because those are basically the two characters that we haven't seen interact, obviously. Because we see Will with his friends and everything. So I'm not optimistic for Will being well in the next season, let's just say.
Okay, so obviously there is a lot that we love about Stranger Things. Is there anything that we didn't like so much?
I understood that they served a purpose, but the bullies that kept picking on the trio, like, I don't know. They seemed kind of obnoxious. I know why they were there. Like, you could feel their purpose in the story and all of that, but they just kind of drove me nuts, and every time they came on screen it was like, oh god, are we really dealing with them again? Like, come on. And there was so much else to do with the trio that I just felt like they were kind of superfluous.
I really loved this show, like, start to finish. It's one of the few that I can say I think every moment I enjoyed, so I'm seriously trying to rack my brain And I can't think of anything that I was like, I wish they hadn't done that.
And I think that that's okay. But just, you know, to play devil's advocate, I thought it was important to kind of throw that question out there.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, but I do agree, like, it's like, it was, like, so solid, and just, like, the way it was done was so great. I think that, like, for me, and I already kind of spoke about this, I think the character I had the biggest problem with was Nancy, just because she was just such a crap friend. But other than that, you know, it is kind of hard to find a fault. But if you do, if you, like, have any thoughts on this, of course, we would love for you to get in contact with us, and we'll roll out our contact information in a little bit when we get to listener feedback. So I think that that kind of wraps up our main discussion for season one. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to touch on that maybe we didn't get to?
Does anyone have any theories about Eleven's, like, birth? Because, I mean, I kind of went with the obvious story of, you know, she was probably, like, kidnapped at birth and raised with all of these other, you know, whatever project that was, not MODOK, but that's what's coming to my mind. And I know there was some confusion or alternate ideas.
I guess I'm not original, because I totally went with that as well. I just thought she was, like, she was snatched as a child.
Yeah, I definitely thought that was the story. Like, I just didn't think we needed any other options.
That was the big one.
Yeah.
Very cool. So, of course, like we kept saying throughout our discussion, we are going to get a season two, which is, I think that, like, that announcement basically broke the internet. Everybody was so excited. Of course, there's a lot to consider in terms of what we could see in season two. So let's do a little bit of theorizing here. Is there one question that you, like, are really, really hoping will get addressed when season two finally hits Netflix?
Where is Eleven?
Whose side is That's Hopper on? Like, we know he's on their side, but, like, I want to know what he knows and why they took him, why they, you know, took him away, and why he's back. Like, what is going on with Hopper at the end of season one?
Oh, I'm just kind of curious from, like, a slightly more meta perspective, if they're going to kind of keep all these characters being, like, the super nice, wonderful angels that they are, because they're all super nice, wonderful angels, and the show still works really well. But I'm curious if they're going to, like, you know, they've compared it to Harry Potter. Like, are they going to go into that, like, oh, everything gets so much more complicated, and obviously the kids are going to get older, and, like, or are we going to be able to, like, unashamedly, unguiltily like all of them through the run of the series?
I think that if they actually do follow through with that whole idea of, like, following the kids as they grow, like Harry Potter does, there's no way that these kids can stay innocent forever. You know, at some point they'll turn into all caps Harry and we'll kind of hate one of them for a bit, but then they'll redeem themselves.
Well, yeah, but the adults are nice too. I mean, everyone's nice in the show. All the good guys are nice. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Good is good and bad is bad.
Exactly, yeah.
I think, go on.
I was going to say, depending on how season two works and how much further ahead we are and, you know, time jump, who knows. You know, there's room for new friends. As kids grow, they make new friends. And so I could see them incorporating new people who maybe cause divides that doesn't necessarily make any of them not nice, but makes it so much harder for them to have to, you know, stick together. I don't think they're going to end up just turning any of them bad, because we like them all. Like, unless the Demogorgon is in them, like Will, I just don't see them, like, taking one of these characters who has, you know, grown so much and come so far already and just making them mean.
Oh, did you guys see I'm sure you did, but the, like, the teaser for season two?
Mm-hmm. Oh, with the episode titles?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
Which one, like, jumped out at you?
There was one that I was like, I wonder what that means. I think it was near the end.
I think The Lost Brother. I'd have to, like, watch it again. I watched it, like, three times.
I think that was the one.
Yeah.
So we have Mad Max, The Boy Who Came Back to Life, The Pumpkin Patch, The Palace, The Storm, The Pollywog, The Secret Cabin, the brain, and then the last episode, like you guys were saying, is the lost brother. I don't know. I kind of just want all of them selfishly.
The Pollywog is a head scratcher.
Yeah. But I do kind of like this, like, the boy who came back to life. I'm assuming that's going to be about Will, right? Because he was presumed dead, but mm-hmm. he's not. Right.
Unless it's something that we don't, like, understand yet.
I like that there are 9.
Me too.
That's pretty exciting.
Oh, right? You know what? I take it back. Like, the worst part about this show was when I realized that it was not 8 to 12 episodes, as, like, most Netflix shows usually are. Yeah. Like, most of them are about 12 episodes the first season. And I was like, there's 8. That's it. I thought I had 4 more. It was awful.
It was terrible. It was the worst feeling when I was on episode 6 and I was like, wait, this is going to finish in 2 episodes? That's not okay.
But the funny thing is, I know a bunch of people, myself included, who were way more open to watching the show because it was 8 episodes. And it was like, it like threw me off and has got me questioning like the entire like TV structure, because it used to be like, when Netflix started doing this, it's like, okay, it's only 13 episodes. Wow, that's great. You know, like you can binge that in a day. And now we're like, 13 episodes is too long. Like, what's wrong with us? You know, what has happened to our like consumption of television? But yeah, no, I've like tried to sell people on it. Like, ah, it's only 8 episodes. Then you'll wish it was more, but it's only 8 episodes.
So I think a lot of times too, the biggest, kind of fear from fans in terms of, you know, second seasons or whatever, especially when a show gets so much hype, has such a solid first season, it's just like the fear that season 2 will not live up to the expectation. So with that being said, is there anything that we like don't want to see in season 2? I know that that's an odd question, but like, are there any tropes that we hope they don't fall into, I guess would be a better way to phrase that.
I hope they don't, I hope they don't like lob any kind of girl characters that aren't like shallow girl characters, you know. I have to assume, well, I mean, I hope that there are more female characters, but I hope it's not like a, like, you know, oh, Lucas likes this girl and like she decides to go out with this other guy and blah blah blah, you know. I hope that if there are more female characters, they're as well developed as everyone so far has been.
I hope that Nancy does not, like, get into that I'm the popular girl kind of thing. Like, if she's dating Steve and they're kind of a thing and he's popular, then it would be very easy for them to let her character change, and I really hope that that doesn't happen. I want her to stay the, you know, decent human that she truly is. She might not have been the best friend, but she is still a pretty decent human being.
I hope the show doesn't get bigger than it already is. Not in terms of, like, fans loving the show, because, you know, you can't control that. But this first season was very intimate. It took place in this small town among this core group of characters, and it was focused on these people and their stories, and it told those stories so well because it wasn't this epic, sweeping sort of tale. And now that the show is here, and now that people are going crazy over it, I hope they don't make it bigger than it was before to sort of give us more, you know, huge visuals and make it feel like this big, epic fantasy kind of thing. I want it to stay small and intimate and kind of awkward and just very raw and real, because I think it'll really benefit from that, like it did in season 1.
I like all of those options. I hope that, you know, not that the Duffer brothers are listening, but I hope we've put those out into the atmosphere enough that they kind of, you know, fall into place.
By the way, okay, was anyone cool. else like, you know, it was like created by the Duffer brothers and was like, who the hell are the Duffer brothers? Like,
yes. Are we supposed to every day of my life.
Yes.
But now they are forever the Duffer brothers, and everyone yes. knows them. And yeah.
You know, my brother and I are like, we have like no filter. We usually like have our own little running commentary on whenever we're watching anything. And I think like he made the joke. He's like, oh, like who are the Duffer brothers trying to be the Coen brothers? Like this makes, you know, like he's just being a jerk about it. And now we're just like clearly angels sent from the above to give us this like amazing manifesto of awesomeness.
Yeah.
So.
Right. It goes from, oh, these people think they can make this 80s reminiscent TV show. Ha ha. To, oh, they made this 80s reminiscent TV show. Oh my God. You know.
Exactly. You are one of us. You have, you know, injected yourself into our world. It's amazing. Okay, cool. So I want to wrap up our main discussion by kind of going, let's talk about like favorite characters. So consider this like rapid fire. I want to know everybody's all-time favorite character in the season and why that character stood out to them.
Okay, clearly, as I've said multiple times before, Dustin is my favorite character. Not only is he completely adorable and super cute, but my favorite part about him is that he just wants everybody to love everybody else. He kind of real talks them and is like, stop fighting, we need to focus on what's important, and he's okay with not necessarily being the best friend. You know, he's very mature for his age and yet still just totally a boy. But he's super cute and I think he's a great friend.
While I also love Dustin, that would be really boring if we all picked the same favorite character. So I picked Hopper. I really, really love Hopper by the end of the series. I didn't like him at the beginning at all. Like, he kind of rubbed me wrong. But by the end, I just really like everything he stands for. He believes people. Like, he gives people the benefit of the doubt. He turned into a real, like, hero, a real guy you could cheer for. And so I want to get to know more about Hopper and really see, you know, what makes him tick and all of that in season two. So, yeah, Hopper is definitely a favorite of mine.
I'm going to say Nancy. I mean, obviously, yeah, Dustin is probably the character that gave me the most joy. But Nancy, I related to her very much, and I appreciated seeing her be intelligent and not, like, you know, she initially starts off and you think you know exactly who she is and what she is and why. And that's completely wrong. You know, she's a smart, caring person who makes a terrible mistake about her friend. And, you know, through the series becomes like, you know, when the shit hits the fan, she is there and totally willing to be a part of it. You know, the scene where, you know, she and Jonathan both cut their hands, is very moving. And yeah, so I like Nancy.
Very good. I think that we can all just agree that Dustin is the real MVP of the show. I adore him too, but like Kristen, for the sake of keeping things nice and, you know, diverse. I'm going to go with, 11. I adore her. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Millie Bobby Brown is this gem and she just plays her so wonderfully. I think that she's so multifaceted and I'm like so excited to see like her grand return, hopefully fingers crossed in season two. Okay. So let's also talk about like our favorite either episode or scene. I know sometimes it's hard to pick favorite episodes, so you can do either or we'll do the same order. So Karen, Kristen, McCall, and then I'll go at the end.
This just feels impossible right off the top. Just going to say that now because I liked so much of it. But I will say one of the scenes that really stuck out to me was when Jonathan finally pulls Nancy from the tree after she's been in the Upside Down. I really love this scene because they had just been fighting beforehand and they kind of stalked off in different directions. Then all of a sudden they're like, where are you? And it's really scary. And I wasn't sure if Nancy was going to survive and I wasn't sure if they were going to reunite. And they kind of forget their differences once they fall in a heap outside the tree and remember that they're on the same side, fighting the same thing and trying to find Barb and Will. So it's just a really good, meaningful scene that I think really bonds them in that moment.
For me, my favorite episode and scene are kind of like the same thing. I loved episode 3, Holly Jolly, because of the Christmas lights scene. The way that Joyce finds to communicate with Will is genius, and I don't know if I would have been smart enough to come up with it. Like, it's so incredibly smart to, you know, put the Christmas lights up on the wall and corresponding letters and use that to actually speak and communicate with your son who's on another plane of existence. It's so cool. And like seeing her come up with it and, you know, use the lights to track him and figure out where he is in the, you know, in the house, in the Upside Down, all of that just stands out. And it's so iconic for the series. It will always, you know, the Christmas lights will always be a thing. And it just, yeah, it stands out. I love that scene so, so, so much.
And I think I'm going to say the whole sequence of sensory deprivation tank, quote unquote, even though that's nothing like a sensory deprivation tank. But just from the very beginning of Eleven's willingness to experience that again, to calling Mr. Clark, who is shout out because he is bae, and that whole thing, and, you know, getting the salt and floating the egg, and then, you know, Joyce's conversation with Eleven, and except for the fact that, like, you realize that Barb is actually dead, that whole sequence just, like, thrills me and warms my heart.
I'm going to have to be boring, and I'm going to have to agree with you, McCall, because that, just for that moment between Joyce and Eleven, like, the fact that obviously Joyce is hell-bent on finding her son, but she's still, like, a mom, and she can't, like, not comfort this child that isn't hers. It was just so beautifully done. And it just, like, it completely, like, pulled at my heartstrings. I got, like, a little choked up watching it. I thought it was so beautiful. It was such a beautiful moment. And so that one totally steals it for me as well.
Well, just because it also, I mean, obviously Eleven and Joyce are not equals per se, but Eleven, we've seen her entire life be basically treated like a brain machine, you know, and then to have Joyce be there and be like, you don't have to do this. I'm, you know, like, supporting her emotionally. Like, it was just such a shift from everything else we've seen as Eleven, like, through her eyes, that it was, yeah, it was doubly moving.
Awesome. Okay, so before we officially sign off, we do want to get to your feedback, because we did ask you guys to send in your general Stranger Things thoughts before we hopped on to record this special. And then just to remind you guys of our contact information in case you want to get in touch about anything we talked about on this particular show, or any show that we choose to do in the future, or even like our weekly shows, we're going to run through our contact information just one more time for you guys so you have that on hand. For starters, if you have rather shorter thoughts, you can always send us a tweet on Twitter. We are at Hypeable Hype. We are also at Hypeable Hype over on Instagram in case you want to follow along with various pop culture related adventures the hosts are having here and there throughout the year. If you have longer comments, you can reach out in two different ways. You can always leave comments in the show notes directly on hypeable.com. And alternatively, you can also shoot us an email. Our email address is hype@hypeable.com. And then finally, just as a fun little extra, we do want to remind you guys that we are on Tumblr. So if you want to hang out with us over there, or want to shoot us an anonymous ask or whatever, you can reach us at hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And we try and update that here and there whenever we get a sec. So come hang out with us on Tumblr too, if you feel the need to do so. Okay, so we're going to start off with some tweets. Kristen, do you want to get the first one here from Tucker?
Sure, yes. Tucker Conley at Tucker Ross Con says, why were the adults so bad at watching their kids? Should the sheriff have given up Eleven? And why did nobody care about Barb? I mean, there's so many questions, you know, from the series, and these are a couple of really good ones. I think we kind of talked a little bit about Barb, but seriously, guys, why did nobody care? I totally agree. And the adults weren't great at being parents, but that's
guys, typical. That was the 80s. That's what it
that
was.
That was the 80s, yeah.
There wasn't as much hysteria. They didn't worry so much that their kids were out during the day biking, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think the worst thing about Barb was that, like, her own parents almost didn't even seem to care. They were just like, oh, she must be at the library. That's awful. I know, poor Barb. Okay, Michal, do you want to get this next tweet from Laura, please?
Yeah, Laura says, I love how Steve... This tweet is perfect for me, right? I love how Steve in Stranger Things subverted the jock guy trope. He wasn't actually a total jerk, and he didn't get eaten by the monster. Yay!
All right, so there's some love for Steve there. And then we also have two short comments here from the show notes on hypeable.com. Karen, do you want to get the first one here from Francis?
Yeah, I love this comment. He says, if the Upside Down is a parallel universe, then why is Hawkins such a mess there? It looks like maybe there was a nuclear war, white stuff drifting everywhere, and it's always cold and dark. Maybe the monster/demogorgon is a genetic mutation of some sort.
We have one more comment here from Katie Colby, who says, I am also wondering if they will address why Hopper found his daughter's stuffed animal in the Upside Down. Could she still be alive?
But, I mean, technically, like, he might have kept that, and the Demogorgon could have taken it from his house.
I think I always just assumed that it was a connection. Like, she had the same stuffed animal as his daughter, and it was what called him back to it, but I didn't necessarily think it was his daughter's.
Ah, interesting. I was going to say, or maybe the government officials, like, placed it in there so that later when they needed a bargaining chip and, like, to get him to work with them, they could say, well, remember, like, your daughter's stuffed animal's down there, but that would be, like, way too much, right?
Yeah, and I think, I just think there's a lot of different things in the Upside Down. We have not even scratched the surface. It could have been an illusion. It could have been, you know, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and also if it's like one of those things where like the Upside Down is basically an exact replica of the right side up, so to speak, like it could just be like that exists there too. Okay, so with that actually wraps up our Stranger Things special here on Hype Podcast, and we really appreciate you guys sticking around to listen to the end. We hope that you enjoyed our discussion and that you too are excited for season two like we all are. Of course, we do want to remind you that if you are just tuning in for the first time, that we do release episodes once a week where we recap the latest and biggest entertainment news stories of the week for you guys and offer up our own analysis. So we really, really hope that you join us for one of our regular episodes if you're just tuning in for the first time here for our Stranger Things episode. And with that said, we will see you guys very soon for another regular episode. And stay tuned. Watch our Twitter space. That's where we announce what we're going to be talking about next, you know, for upcoming specials and things like that. And yeah, we'll be back very soon to bring you guys more content. But until then, thank you so much for listening. My name is Pamela.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michal.